Sometime last year, a CEO in Washington State made a bold decision. After reading some research that concluded emotional well-being rose with income level until you reach between $70,000 and $75,000 annual salary, he decided to take a $930,000 pay cut so that everyone in his credit card processing business would make at least $70,000. Now that the decision was made some time ago, there was an article this week that talked about some of the unintended backlash against the decision. For example, some of the other workers who may have already been making $80,000 or $90,000 were upset. They didn't get a significant increase in their own pay compared to the people who were maybe making $40,000 or $50,000 and now being paid $70,000. They asked, what did they do to deserve it? And people who were already making more money than the new minimum essentially felt cheated by the decision. They felt undervalued. And that sense of resentment prevented them from participating in the joy of other people, and many of them eventually left the business. The parables we just read from Luke 15 are often identified by the sense of being lost and found. And at one time, I thought these parables were about how magnificent it is to be found by God. I once was lost, but now I'm found. And understood this way, these parables are comforting to us. I am the lost sheep until Jesus Christ finds me and carries me on his shoulders. I'm worth at least a coin. And no matter how far I wander from God, God patiently welcomes me home. And those do seem very comforting to us. However, perhaps these parables were intended to discomfort us some. As I've grown older, these parables, especially when we read them together, are less about being lost and found. The parables, perhaps, are trying to get to a different feeling. And it's probably not a feeling that different from those workers who didn't get a raise. What if these parables were more focused on being one of the 99 sheep? Or one of the neighbors of the woman who didn't show any signs of resentment and came over and partied with her? Or what if they're really about the prodigal son's older brother? Perhaps these are cautionary tales about resentment. These stories are reminders that we will struggle to experience the grace of God if we do not delight when other people experience God's grace. Despite our best intentions, sometimes we think that we are more deserving than others, and we want God's attention all to ourselves. I'm really excited that we're spending the month of August reading parables, because the more time we spend reading parables, the more likely we are to recognize that parables defy well-thought-out, easy explanations. And yet, our tendency is to kind of look for those well-thought-out, easy explanations. We look for clear, concise interpretations and a form of storytelling that wants to open our eyes and engage us with dialogue. Parables are intended to shake us from thinking that we can imagine God in predictable and logical ways. So these three parables are variations on a theme. And even though they defy systematic interpretation, I couldn't help but turn to a commentary earlier this week to make sure I wasn't overlooking a scriptural allusion or something of cultural significance in these stories. I was hoping that a commentator could expound upon the fact that if you leave 99 sheep without a shepherd, all 99 of them are going to wander off aimlessly. It's more than likely that the shepherd did not rescue one sheep as much as lose 99 sheep. But no, the commentator made reference to that, but he didn't expound upon it. Now, I was hoping that the commentator could provide some clarity about the woman and the coin. The coin, called a drachm, is only worth a day's wage. Yet she spends all day looking for it. She lights a lamp, burns precious oil. She sweeps everywhere. She may have spent more time and energy and money looking for this coin than it's worth. Yet when she finds it, she invites her neighbors to celebrate with her. Or are we going to accept the invitation to join in the celebration as the woman's neighbor? Or are we going to fret that she wasted all day searching for 40 bucks? These understandings of the parables ask more questions than they provide answers. Do you really want the shepherd leaving 99 sheep? Do you really want to celebrate the recovery of a day's wage? And Luke is able to bring this theme even closer to home by telling us the parable of the prodigal son, where many of us imagine our own families. Why does the troublemaker get more attention than I do? But alas, the commentator did not feed my desire for a systemic or a systematic interpretation of these stories. I was hoping for pages and pages of notes and insights. But there was just a short paragraph. And in that paragraph, he decided just to tell one story. Maybe that's how parables work. That's how we interpret them. They evoke our own stories and images. It's a story from a Jewish tradition. There was once a farmer who met God. And when this farmer met God, God said, I'm going to give you three wishes. Except there's one caveat. Whatever you get, your neighbor gets double. So the farmer said, well, I would love 100 sheep. So God provided the farmer with 100 sheep. And he was delighted. He was thrilled. Until he saw that his neighbor had 200 sheep. And he was distraught. He felt cheated. And so the farmer went back to God and said, I would love 100 more acres of fields. And again, he was overjoyed until his neighbor had 200 extra acres of fields. And once again, he was distraught. He felt jealous. He sensed resentment. He couldn't celebrate God's goodness. Gratitude seemed ridiculous to him. So for the third wish, he said, God, I want you to strike me blind in one eye. God wept. The commentator then said, only those who can celebrate God's grace to others can experience that mercy themselves. How do we respond when other people are found? At first, most of us probably would be glad that someone has experienced God in a new light. But these parables are often quite discomforting. A couple of years ago, I was studying these with a friend, and I was in a room full of people that I considered to be compassionate and kind and loving and gracious. Then someone just got angry all of a sudden. I don't like it that these sinners are more important than the righteous in these stories. I've done everything that I'm supposed to do, but Mr. Sinner over there gets all the attention. Let's skip over these parables. I'm sure some of you felt that way. Why are these parables so challenging? What makes it hard for even relatively kind, compassionate, faithful people to celebrate God's grace to others as it's expressed in these parables? While we can never be entirely sure why Jesus tells these stories, I think this is the response Jesus may have been trying to evoke from us. Jesus is telling us these parables in response to the Pharisees and the scribes. They were grumbling and complaining that Jesus was eating with outcasts and sinners. Jesus was not giving enough attention to the religious establishment. Jesus wasn't coming to their events and their symposia. He wasn't engaging in the debate of the culture war. What about the Sabbath and the purity laws? And what are we going to do with the Gentiles? They kept trying to ask him questions to figure out where he fell on a spectrum, but he keeps eluding being pinned down by them. If Jesus had been at the primary debate this week, he would have been infuriating. He would have answered all the questions with stories about lost sheep and lost coins. He would have told stories about seeds and marriage banquets, weeds, nets, doors. No one would have known what he was talking about. Jesus was trying to change the way we imagine God. He was trying to change the way we imagine one another. The people asking him these questions in Luke refused to participate in the delight of other people being found by God. It was too disconcerting. It challenged their own identity too deeply. They wanted to control the rules of divine engagements, but they're not ours to control. The grace of God can be messy. It goes to the undeserving. It defies our expectations. It even upsets our sense of good and bad, right and wrong, or sense of morality. It can be really hard to delight in one another when there's no advantage for us. We like watching other people succeed. We love a success story. But we also want a piece of the pie. We like a success story if it doesn't cost us anything. We like these stories if we don't have to give up the attention of the shepherd. We like these stories if we don't have to be the one whose father is preoccupied with our absent sibling. What are you willing to give up so that others may encounter the grace of God? Wealth? Power? Privilege? Self-righteousness? None of that is given up easily. The Apostle Paul once said he would give up his salvation if it meant that other people could be restored to God. Luke has a deep concern that God's salvation is not just for the one group of people. Rather, God is working to save the world. It's for all nations. The gospel is for all people. And if we see God be merciful to our enemies or to strangers, people we've never met, sometimes we do feel a little upset. It's really hard, if not impossible, to experience that mercy yourself, unless you celebrate God's grace to others. I'm reminded of a story once told by Fred Rogers. In the Special Olympics one year, there were 9 contestants for the 100-yard dash. They lined up at the gate, and at the sound of the gun, they took off. And one of the boys didn't make it very far. He stumbled out of the gate, and eventually he fell, and his knee bled, and he began to cry. The other 8 children heard the boy crying, and they slowed down. They turned around and ran back to him, every single one of them. The boy got up, and the rest of the runners linked their arms together and joyfully walked to the finish line. They all finished the race at the same time. And when they did, everyone in the stadium stood up and cheered and whistled and cheered for a long, long time. Are we going to celebrate the mercy of God to others, even if it seems like it comes at a cost to us? God's grace is freely bestowed upon us. And if we don't rejoice when others experience that grace, it's nearly impossible to experience ourselves.